Hello.
Hello. Right, should we try again?
I think we should try
Let's.
again.
Okay.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrett. Plain, simple.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will surely become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. But for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast at Two True Freaks presentation. I am, as ever, Andrew Leyland, and I am one of your hosts on this guide through every single episode of Deep Space Nine, even the crap ones. As ever, I am joined by the effervescent Mr. Paul Spataro.
Hello.
And the fragrant Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hello.
And I appreciate Paul laughing at that, given it's the third time we've introduced this goddamn show.
Just the idea of an odoriferous Bill Robinson is
odoriferous
is more pleasing when I know he's hundreds and hundreds of miles away.
Mr. Gaseous Anomaly.
Take us behind that gaseous anomaly.
Bill was venting.
The Bill Robinson Bill, Nebula.
Bill was venting his plasma coils.
He was ejecting his warp core.
Whoa. Easy.
I hope you don't have a breach.
Get a little personal.
At least it's not all those little ships that begin Star Trek Beyond. Anyway.
Get it, take a strain.
If you're straining, you're not doing it right.
I'm giving you all she's got.
This is very disturbing, and yet
Captain's
funny.
Log. Anyway, on today's episode of Listen to the Prophets, we are looking at Heart of Stone, which, according to the mighty Wikipedia, is a Season 3, Episode 14, directed by Alexander Singer and written by Ira Stephen Burr and Robert Hewitt Wolfe. But before we leap into that, do we have any Star Trek news?
Nothing.
Star Trek Beyond's out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh,
it's got a shit cover. Utterly awful cover.
It is the movie poster.
No, the one we've got's not. The one we've got's this horrible photoshopped look down image on Kirk, Spock, and the girl who's on the planet who helps them. It's awful.
That was a movie poster that was out.
Was it? Oh, I don't like it at all. But the film's all right. Bill, have you seen it yet?
No. And I
moving on.
I almost picked it up. I had it in my hand at the register. And I only put it down because I was also buying a pair of pants and a shirt, and I was like, man, this is just too expensive. Because it was about $26, and it had three little ships in it as well. And it was the ships that were making me want to buy it. It was like a special Walmart collector's edition. But I was like, God, I just can't justify more crap sitting up on all my shelves. So, only crap in the toilet. So I put it back. It was like, well, maybe I'll get it some other day, maybe.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, my crap content in my house is pretty much at its
max.
Oh,
man, you're just like max crap.
So I think
no offense, I like your crap. Whoa, that didn't sound good.
Yeah, but now what I've hit is the point where if I get new crap, it has to be something that's superior to the crap I have because it's going to displace something. I really don't have room to just put new things, so I have to take away something old to make room for something new. So I can't just buy random crap, it has to be superior crap now.
Yours is the superior.
There you go.
I shall avenge you!
Joaquin!
Alright, well, we've no Star Trek news.
That just means I have to up my game when I come and visit. I have to buy you better and better things.
Better crap. Yeah.
Well, sure, the Tauntaun you bought me takes up half my china cabinet.
I know.
Did he gut it for you as well?
No, this one smelled bad on the outside.
So does Bill now.
Hey.
That's the theme of this episode. As Bill slowly turns to stone.
Turn to stone. You begun to turn to stone. Turn to stone. Aha, you thought I was going to go with Neil Young. Aha, I went with ELO. There you go.
Wow, ELO. You zigged when we were expecting you to zag.
Exactly.
Exact amount. All right, should we talk about Heart of Stone then?
Do we have to?
Yes.
Sorry. Yes, sure.
To capture an enemy.
I'm going after him.
Right. How much would you give?
What is it?
From the look of things, the crystal is spreading. How far would you go?
If you stay here, you'll die.
In order to save a friend.
Something's not right here.
How much would you risk?
I won't leave you.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Synopsis for this episode. On board a runabout, Odo and Major Kira are in pursuit of a Mackie vessel in the Badlands. They pursue the vessel to a small moon and land nearby. That's no moon. That's a space station. They find that the Mackie vessel... It's so crossing the streams. They find that the Mackie vessel is empty and split up to search for the pilot. After a short while, Odo comes across Kira, whose foot is caught in an expanding crystal meth. Sorry, expanding crystal mass. Odo is unable to either remove the crystal from Kira or transport Kira back to the runabout. Meanwhile, on Deep Space Nine, Nog attempts to convince Commander Benjamin Sisko to endorse his application to join Starfleet Academy. Sisko is doubtful and suspects Nog is engaging in some underhanded scheme, especially since Nog's request was accompanied by the customary bribe Ferengi culture expects when making such requests. To test Nog's resolve and his motives, he gives the Ferengi the task of counting the inventory of a cargo bay, which he completes quickly, but Sisko still has his doubts. On the moon, Kira is slowly being covered by the crystal and insists that Odo leave her as there are increasing seismic tremors. Tremors? There are increasing seismic tremors, presumably.
Hello,
from Bill's
I'm
ablutions.
Trevor.
And I'm getting bigger.
He attempts to free her using an ultrasonic generator and reveals some personal information to her as they wait for the crystal to shatter. As the crystal slowly swallows her whole after the generator fails to work and the tremors become even worse, Odo confesses his love for Kira. To his surprise, she says that she is in love with him too. On Deep Space Nine, Sisko informs Nog that he will not give him a recommendation, as he has concerns that it is all a cunning scheme. Nog confesses that he wants to do it so that he doesn't turn out like his father, whom he describes as an engineering genius, but his culture won't let him pursue it. Sisko, stunned by this confession of a Ferengi having such upstanding ambitions, responds by agreeing to recommend Nog to the Academy. Odo is suspicious of Kira's responses and points a phaser at her, demanding to know who she is. Kira and the crystal suddenly morph into a female founder who reveals that she was the Mackie all along, and she was hoping to convince Odo to return to the Dominion. She reveals the location of the real Kira and transports away. Odo finds Kira and tells her of the founder, but not his feelings for her. And that synopsis jumped all over the place, and not in a good way. Go on.
I'd say that Sisko turned into Willy Wonka at the end of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. No, I'm not going to recommend you for Starfleet. Get out of my office. You won, Nog. You won. I think that was the better of the two plots of this episode. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't mind this one at all. I think it's fairly okay. Episode. It's saved by the characterization and the acting. Some of the writing's pretty good. It's hindered by that shitty stone special effect that is just really, really not very good at all.
I'm curious when we get to Blaine's part, which we don't have to jump to it now, but I'm curious if he has any science stuff to say about it, because I have a few science things.
That I
call bullshit on.
All right, well, we will hear some of that, I guess. But I thought this was pretty good. I thought it was fairly riveting. And what I liked about it is, as I was watching it, I started thinking, well, Kira wouldn't react that way. Because she like, breaks down fairly quickly. All right, Chewie, it's okay. She breaks down fairly quickly and starts, like, tearing up. And I thought, because I forgot this episode. I had seen it before, but I had totally forgotten it. And I thought, that's not like Kira. That's not right. She wouldn't do that. And
well, maybe she's claustrophobic.
Kira, so it
was fine. I don't know. I don't like if I was being encased by an ever-growing piece of stone, I might be a little freak out a little bit too.
Yeah, because you're a whimpering bag of bilk.
Hey,
she's Kira.
Well, where would I go to the bathroom? That's what I was thinking of the whole thing. How
you'd be upset just until your lower regions got turned encased in stone, and then you wouldn't care anymore.
The whole thing, I'm just going, ew, ew, ew. What would I do?
What would Bill do? That could be a new section on the show. What would
the
Bill
counterpoint?
Do?
The counterpoint.
Most of the episode, most of the resolutions will be Bill ran out of the room screaming.
There was the Blaine view and the Bill view.
I'm gonna send you to Bill view because you're nuts.
Ba-da-ba.
But I rather liked this episode. I thought that both plots, although I didn't really feel there was too much of a connection between them, other than kind of, you know, loyalty to Starfleet somehow or something along those lines. But I thought both plots were fairly engaging, and you know, I really liked the Nog one. I do agree that it's probably the superior because it had some real character building. Although we did have the Odo moment where he confessed his love, which we've seen building up over the last 2.5 seasons. I thought this was a solid episode. So, you know, I mean, you guys both seem to have been a little bit more down on it than I am, and that's, I think we're kind of turning things upside down from our usual way of doing things.
No, I don't think this one was bad at all. I think it is hindered by the terrible special effects. But the actual writing and the acting, I mean, God bless Nana Visitor, who does her best whilst encased in a big, massive log of Bill Poo. Renaud Auberjonois is great, and the Sisko stuff is brilliant. Nog really brings his game up. Aaron Eisenberg's performance in this one's really good. And it's hindered by the effects, which really do look terrible. And Star Trek's not made on its special effects. It's not the effects that sell the show. So fortunately, you can kind of get past that. Even the episodes of the old show with the papier-mâché rocks. If the story's engaging, the actor's engaging, and the writing's engaging, you'll kind of ignore the bad special effects. But we're at the point now where even television shows have feature-quality effects. And so that rock just kind of stood out. I mean, it's nice to look in the companion and see that the production crew hated it when they were filming it. And they tried to fix it as best they could in post-production, but Iris Stephen Burr says there's only so much they could do with it. It just wasn't a very good prop. It wasn't filmed in a way that they could fix it in post, so they were just kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, I'm not all that big on special. I mean, I love when I see a really good special effect, but you know, I can watch episodes of Star Trek. I can watch episodes of Doctor Who. And I can get by, you know, I can get by that the Dalek has a plunger on its arm. You know, it doesn't really bother me. I can always overlook that stuff. So the poor quality of the stone didn't really bother me to speak of. In fact, you know, like I wasn't even really thinking about it much as I was watching it. So again, to me, it was more the storyline, and I did see Kira acting out of character, and I think, again, that was borne out by the story, that it turned out it really wasn't Kira. So that was my biggest observation as I was watching it, though.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest takeaway from this, how good an actress Nana Visitor is. that she wasn't playing Kira for this episode. And if you're watching it going, well, that's a bit odd and that's a bit weird and, oh, that's not very good. And then you get to the end of it and you realize that it was purposeful. You're going, oh, right, she's actually a really good actress then.
And then I had a bit of a pitfall in that, you know, we know where the story's going to go. So...
True.
You know, last episode we saw Vedic Baral bite the dust. And then this episode, and again, I didn't remember the resolution of it. This episode, not only do I see her acting out of character, but then I see her declaring her love for Odo, and I'm like, but Baral just died last episode.
Yeah.
So I was scratching my head about that. But again, it all worked out at the end. And in fact, I think that's probably part of why Odo figured it all out.
Odo's like, I call bullshit on this.
And I like that Odo was a detective. Well, go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say what you were saying. I think that Odo's a very good detective. We've already seen that in other episodes.
Yeah, whereas I would have been she loves me.
Yeah, I think he initially was elated by that, but then the other part of the detective part of his brain kicked in and was like, wait a minute, you know, this is a big turnaround. Yeah, so. And plus the whole thing with he was like, so when the Maquis shot at you, he was here, right? And he shot at you, and so there's no way that, you know, like that. It became an episode of Space Columbo at that point.
I don't mind an episode of Space Columbo.
I would love to see Space Columbo, actually.
Instead of his eye looking one way, it falls out of his head. Ah, yeah. But he still has a trench coat. Just one more question, Mr. Odo.
I think Odo will look great in a trench coat of fedora.
Well, maybe we'll see that when he gets to the when they get to that alternate universe where Sisko is a writer. Don't we get a trench coat in that?
Yes, I think we do get a trench coat in that one. So the Odo story. I thought the Odo storyline was actually quite heartbreaking when he realizes at the end that he's just confessed to her that he loves her, and then it's not her. So from his point of view, and René Auberjonois again does an excellent job. So I thought all of that was very well written and very well performed.
Oh, we find out the meaning or the origin of his name, which is nothing, or unknown sample or something like that.
Yeah, so all that's really good. I, for the most part, I quite enjoyed the Odo Kira storyline. I love the little spat at the beginning as well. Like they're almost a married couple without actually being a married couple. Except Odo's the one doing the silent death stare.
He's like,
Well, that's Odo's personality too, though. He does that stare all the time.
So all of that was, you know, yeah, the special effects hindered it, but it didn't interfere with the performances.
And let's switch over to Nog a little bit. Now, up to this point, and again, we know where this is going, but up to this point, we hadn't seen any clue that he was going to want to be in Starfleet. In fact, I don't really think we saw much in the way of a clue other than his friendship with Jake, which kind of goes against...
One or two episodes ago, he was, you know, deep into Ferengi culture and talking about the human female and you know, we had the big, you know, they had the big spat between the two of them, and then that now he's like, I want to join Starfleet, I want to be more. I mean, it was a kind of a quick, you know, there doesn't seem to have been a lot of build up, but it is an interesting turn for this character. Was it this episode or is it in the next one where Rom stands up to Quark about Nog joining Starfleet?
It's this one.
Oh, okay. Because it wasn't mentioned in the synopsis, so I wasn't quite sure.
No, Nog. Rom supports his son and what his son wants to do.
But he stands up to Quark in doing so, which is a good turn for his character too.
And a lot of interesting stuff will come from this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those that, yeah, it did kind of come out of left field a little bit in this episode, but you're not like other shows of the era and earlier where they'll just ignore it later. This will become a major thing for Nog. And ultimately in season... Yeah, in season 7, it will actually become a big thing for Nog.
And it's interesting to turn the cliche or the anticipation, not really cliche, but to change what you'd normally expect. Now you have Sisko, who thought his son was going to go into Starfleet, dealing with the fact that his son isn't, and having somebody who he really doesn't think of as a surrogate son going in and almost being a surrogate son in a certain way, and looking for him, looking for his respect, looking for his recommendation. So, you know, there's some kind of deep psychological thoughts going on here. You know, I mean, they definitely twisted the paradigm by having, you know, Jake not want to follow in his father's footsteps.
Yeah, and they kind of played a little bit with that with Wesley as well. Like, this idea that Wesley was definitely destined for Starfleet. And then ultimately he went on his own path as well. So to actually have it be somebody like Nog who goes into Starfleet is quite an interesting twist on it. Because isn't that what Starfleet's all about? New life forms, new civilizations?
I seem to have heard that terminology before.
Can it be said that, well, I don't want to say this was a stunt, but when they put Worf in Starfleet, it seemed like more of a stunt or just like a big shakeup. And I guess this would, you could kind of say this is a little bit of the same here, just with that. But that kind of shows the diversity of Starfleet and of the Federation, is that, you know, they're willing to take a chance on certain races that they would not normally think would fit with the rest of them.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's what Starfleet's about. It's the acceptance of others. And especially seeing as at first you kind of get the impression that Ben's a little bit, I'm not too sure about this, which shows some of his prejudice. And I like it when they do that in Star Trek. It's too easy to do them all as sophisticated and accepting just from the get-go. Like, the Next Generation crew were always just really squeaky clean in that regard. And the fact that Sisko is a little bit dubious about Nog going into Starfleet is a nice reflection that there may still be prejudice in the future, but we're not going to be prejudiced today, which to me is what Star Trek's about. It's fighting that prejudice and accepting that not everyone's exactly the same. And Nog may not want to be a traditional Ferengi. He may want to be something more. And it's exactly like you just said, Bill. It's Starfleet taking a chance on that and seeing where it goes. The Nog stuff was the more interesting plot line, I thought.
I thought he was more than a little dubious. I think he out and out thought it was bullshit.
Well, even better, that Ben Sisko is being shown to be a man who's not the squeaky clean Starfleet guy that Picard is. Picard wouldn't have had a dilemma with this, would he? He would have said, we welcome you in open arms.
And he would have surrendered the ship to him.
I don't know about that, because they showed... Next Gen never really did the Ferengi any good turns.
Picard would have had a Borg trying to go into the Academy.
Yeah.
It stands here!
Stand in line here! No further!
But I also liked that they showed Nog to have assets that would be useful in Starfleet. This isn't just he wants to go in, so we're letting him in. He proved himself by doing a better job of doing the inventory in that cargo bay than anyone else had, and even discovered things they had missed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, nothing was missing. You know, they were concerned maybe he stole something. I
an understandable really... concern given what happens in Profit Motive.
So we will get to Profit Motive.
Yes, we will.
But I thought that, you know, it was well written in that respect. I think it was, you know, carefully thought out, that it was realistic in the way it was portrayed as far as Sisko's response to it and as far as everyone else's response and Nog's response. I thought all around they just had it written in a way where it sounded like, yeah, I could see that's the way that it would go. And I think if they had just accepted it, as you said, you know, would have been what they might have done in the past, then you'd look at it and say, eh. You know, not only would it have eliminated a potential tension from the story, but it just would not have rang true. So all in all, I almost feel like Rom should have been the guy going into Starfleet, but he's too old, I guess.
Because he is, they've established a couple of times, Rom's a very good engineer. So you could see him working with Chief O'Brien, but he's always subservient to his older brother. Which is why the scene at the end where he stands up for Nog was really quite satisfying.
Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm.
The actor who plays Rom, has he been in anything else that we would know? Was it Max Grodnick or something like that?
Well, let's take a look. Rom.
I think he's played lots of aliens in Star Trek. Not just this character.
Let's see. Episode filmography. Choo-choo and the Philly Flash.
That's Carol Burnett and Alan Arkin.
Oh, yeah, he was in that. Barton Fink. The Rocketeer. He's a wounded robber in The Rocketeer. The Gambler Returns. Lucky
yes,
the Draw.
Yes, he is in The Rocketeer. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
Sister Act. Oof.
I've never seen Sister Act.
Oh, good. Don't. He's in Apollo 13.
Oh, right.
He plays an alien on the moon. He plays a Ferengi on the moon.
He's in Star Trek Insurrection in a deleted scene. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. You're talking to me? Oh. He's in Bruce Almighty. Rumpelstiltskin.
Not a lot that I've seen, actually.
Yeah. And then, that just says filmography. It doesn't say any other TV. But I didn't go to IMDb. I just went to Wikipedia, so they might be a little lacking. But yeah, they get all his Deep Space Nine listings, so. Though. Alvin is in the house.
Alright, well, do we have anything else more on this one? I'm a little light on discussion.
Well, because I think most of the major plot beats that are introduced in this episode will be followed up as the show goes on.
Well,
and
let's talk about that a little bit, actually.
Okay.
You know, this is a reminder of the Dominion being out there and that they haven't forgotten what's going on, because I think as a viewer you kind of tend to forget that a little bit. And you know, they've kind of moved on to other plot lines, and we started the season with this, but now we're, I don't know, what are we, 13 episodes deep, something like that, 14?
Yeah, 14.
And we haven't had a lot of Dominion in here. I mean, we started with the Search, then I think the next thing we had was the Abandoned.
The Search is over.
And I don't think we've had, and the Abandoned was episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6. So we've gone a couple of months now without any real Dominion contact, and I think as a viewer you run the risk that you have forgotten the threat that they showed us at the end of the second season. So it's nice to bring them back in, but to bring them back in an organic way where it's not really, you know, you're not getting beaten over the head with it, that it kind of backs up some of what we saw at the end of season 2, the beginning of season 3, where they had all this intel on on our side of the wormhole and what was going on and what the Federation had going. They knew all of this information, and it was somewhat perplexing, like, you know, how'd they get all of this? So now you see that they send spies over, and except when you have someone who's as good a detective as Odo, you may never realize it. I mean, now if this gambit had gone the way that they had anticipated and Odo hadn't figured out what's going on, maybe they would have killed Kira just to keep the ruse going.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting aspect of this episode, a little subtext that we really didn't get too much of. But, you know, at the end of The Search, you know, the female shapeshifter, and I wish we had a name for her other than the female shapeshifter.
Well, that's all she's called in the credit.
The female founder.
Maybe we should just call her the founder. Because I think she's really the only founder we ever meet that we get a personality from.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, the Founder, at the end of the search, told Odo she'll be keeping an eye on him. And clearly she is. And it makes you wonder, has there been anything in the intervening episodes, where, you know, the whatever 13 episodes that we've seen, have there been any other moments where he's been kind of under surveillance and we just haven't even realized it?
Because they're going to play with that as we go down the line, aren't they?
Now, the one thing that just does jump out at me that I have a tough time acclimating myself to is the fact that the Founders, as we meet them, all have a similar look to Odo. But Odo created that look in order to...
To blend in, and to look like his teacher.
Blah, blah, blah. Pay no attention to previous plot points. Blah, blah, blah.
So that's something that bothers me a little.
I mean, you could say that, maybe he couldn't. Well, see, because the other Founders we'll see, maybe or maybe not, can easily
maybe that is their default
when they're in a humanoid form, that is their default form, and Odo just went to it not realizing that that was the default form.
That's pretty much what I was just going to say. If they had given an explanation like that, it probably would have been good enough for me. But I don't think they ever do.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they ever explained that, to be honest with you.
No.
Why do you look like the Bajoran who taught Odo?
Maybe they just gloss over it, never mention it again.
I think, if anything, they make it sound like they look like that to make Odo more comfortable.
Could be.
But that wouldn't explain all of them doing it.
Yeah, because you see them later in scenes where Odo is nowhere around, to where they're on their ships with the Jem'Hadar. Well, because the Jem'Hadar immediately recognized Odo as a Founder too, didn't they, when they first saw him?
Yes, even the Abandoned instinctively.
Yeah. Yeah. So that right there says that's their default humanoid form.
So they would look like the Dr. What's his name?
Yeah. Dr. blah 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 blah.
Dr. Paul? I know who you mean.
Paul. Dr. Paul Bearer? No, sorry, wait. That was a Saturday afternoon horror show host in Tampa, Dr. Paul Bearer.
Well, he was the manager of the Undertaker in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. But anyway, I have a science. I call science, well, I don't want to say science. I'll just say science bull hockey. Not that I didn't say bullshit earlier. Oh, I said it again. So as that rock is slowly encasing Kira, yeah, I made the joke about what happens when she has to go to the bathroom. But even more important is once it starts to go above her lungs, if that's solidifying solid like it appears to be, she would have passed out way before it got to her neck because she wouldn't be able to breathe properly.
They do make it look like she's having difficulty breathing.
Yeah, but still, I still think... Yeah. Bah! Maybe we should find out what Blaine has to say.
I was just going to say, since you have a scientific question, we've got to ask ourselves, what would Blaine say? And let's see, what would Blaine say? Blaine would say, "Hi, guys. Nog is redeemed from his dating adventures last week. He is now on the path we remember from the course of the series, heading to Starfleet Academy. Odo confirms for others what the attentive viewers have known for a while, and we are moving forward with the Dominion. Not an entirely entertaining episode, but an important piece of the larger puzzle nonetheless. Blaine." Blaine was a little terse this week. But that's okay. I always appreciate Blaine's efforts on our behalf. And if anything, we have Mark Kamphausen to give us a little bit more thoughts on it. And you may be asking yourself, what would Mark say? Mark would say, "Greetings, gents. I must admit, I was not really looking forward to this episode, but I enjoyed it more than expected. The Odo Kira scenes were much better than I recall. They gave us excellent character exploration of Odo. We get to learn the origin of Odo's name, hear about his friendship with O'Brien, which unfortunately we never really witness, see his investigative mind at work, and hear his feelings for Kira, the weakest part of the episode. I didn't see the fact that he wasn't... I didn't see the fact that wasn't Kira coming at all, but I totally bought into Odo figuring it out. René Auberjonois plays the whole Columbo element of Odo so well. He definitely has the feel of a grizzled detective. Part of it is the roughness of his voice. I'm okay with the changeling's ability to mimic a person's looks, but I don't see how they can capture a person's personality as well. I think this becomes more of an issue for me in the future seasons. I would have liked to have seen Nana Visitor change her performance a bit to subtly suggest she's not really Kira, but I didn't detect any differences. Also, I don't mind the changeling morphing effects as most people seem to. I've seen many special effects that bother me more so. I can live with these. Now the B-plot is really the best part of the episode. Seeds are planted not just for Nog, but for Rama as well, that will pay dividends in the future. Nog's desire to join Starfleet and reticence to discuss his motivations are both believable and understandable. It's amazing how DS9 was able to take such minor characters and give them such great story arcs. I don't think any other Star Trek series was able to accomplish this. It's really one of the main elements that makes DS9 the best of Trek. I think that's all for now. Keep up the great podcasting, Mark K. Now, we've discussed the fact that we thought Kira, or that Nana Visitor, did change her performance, and we think the writing kind of commented on that as well. So I do think that was there, and as I was watching it, I was even saying, that's not Kira, she wouldn't act that way. So I got that. I also don't mind the morphing effects. We talked about that a little bit. And we also all agree that the subplot was actually the stronger storyline. So, I don't know. Any other comments on Mark or Blaine's emails?
No, I think Mark and those are all pretty much on the same page today, other than I agree with you. I do think Nana Visitor modulated a performance, but it was very subtle. And, you know, I think what's impressive about it is she did it, just stood there. If you think about it, she couldn't walk around the room, she couldn't gesture, she couldn't do any of the tricks that actors normally do, so she had to basically just stand still and deliver a good performance that was slightly off kilter. And I think she did a good job with it. But yeah, I agree. Odo is a brilliant detective. And there is that voice that he has that does channel 1940s, 1950s PIs. And yeah, the B-plot was the best part of the episode. The Nog stuff will become very important later on. And I think it's a testament to Deep Space Nine generally, that a character like Nog will become important.
Yeah, well, I think Deep Space Nine, more than any other show, any other Star Trek show, was truly an ensemble. I think the other shows tried. I think to some extent they succeeded, but I think this one is the one that did it the best.
You think we had a parallel here with the Next Gen? Again, with Nog going in, were they trying to duplicate two things here from the Next Gen? And that's when they had Wesley going into the academy, and now we have Nog going into the academy.
But I think they were trying to fix a badly done one the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, because Wesley never seemed to... Well, it seemed like he was forced, or that was pretty much what everybody expected him to do, was to go into the academy. And here you have a character that nobody expects to go into.
Wouldn't it have been better if Wesley had applied, like, to be in the Vulcan Science Academy? Because he was shown to be some sort of, you know, genius child.
Yeah, making the opposite of Spock.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Now, if you get a time machine, I can go back, talk to the showrunners on TNG.
What's wrong with you? This isn't going to work.
Yeah, I thought Wesley you know, was kind of a forced character right from the beginning. I think they never really knew how to write him quite right. And I always felt bad for Will Wheaton, because I don't think he did anything bad in how he portrayed him. But I always thought he was written kind of poorly.
And shut up, Wesley!
and they, you know, they kind of forced his character into situations where he really wouldn't be in. And I thought the show suffered somewhat for that. And I think possibly doing that reverse Spock might have been cool. And you could have even had Henry Winkler do a commercial for it. The reverse Spock. Are we ready to give our ratings on this, or do we have anything else?
No, I think it's rating time.
All right, Andy, your episode.
I think this is a good solid 3. I think it's entertaining largely because of the writing and the acting. Some of the production design lets it down a bit. Again, it's another episode that is better in subsequent viewings because of how it affects the future. But we are at the point now where Deep Space Nine is pretty solidly enjoyable, even when it's not very good, because the writing's pretty much top-notch now and the actors are all comfortable with what they're doing.
I'm going 3.5 on it because I thought it was pretty solid all around. As I was watching it, I'm seeing things and I'm saying, that's not how Kira would act. That doesn't seem right. I'm calling BS on this episode. And it was just because I'm not quite as good as Odo that I didn't figure out why. But ultimately, there was that payoff where they told me why it was all different. And I thought that was really nicely done. And that's the A plot, which we thought was inferior to the B plot. The B plot, I thought, was engaging throughout and very, very entertaining. Also character building, and character building not only for Nog, but for other people as well. We saw some growth out of Rom. We saw, you know, Quark do some things. We saw Sisko do some things. All around, I thought that was a solid plot that we got with good acting. So overall, you know, I will concede the poor special effects, as you've pointed out, Andy, and I give you that, but that did not disturb my ability to enjoy this episode, and I just thought it was, you know, pretty solid all around. Doctor?
I will go with a... Let's see, Andy gave it a 3, you gave it a 3.5.
Yeah, you gotta go for a 3.25.
Ah, that's what you expect me to
that
do!
That would be too that would be too easy to divide.
No, I'm going to give it a 3 as well. I think I gave, what was it, Meridian? Like a 2.5 because one was really horrible and one was really good. But this one was not... These were both good in their own ways. But again, the B plot to me was better than the A plot. So I'm going to come down... I'm going to come down on the side of the Angels. On the side of Andy Angel, with a 3.
Are you really saying Andy's an angel? I mean, I like the guy, but come on.
Well, he's married to Angela.
And if you said Angela's an angel, I'm not gonna argue with you. We all love Angela.
She wouldn't argue with you either.
Has she accepted your friend request yet, Paul?
Of course she did.
Oh damn!
She did it the same day I requested it.
No,
yes,
say it isn't so.
My jealous friend.
No jealousy.
Oh, this guy can hear it. I could hear your quivering
he
lower
sounds
lip.
Like an upset child, doesn't he?
You could hear his lip quivering as he said that.
Sorry, I'm not bothered. Not really.
I'm fine.
He accepted me eventually.
I just got a little static on my side.
Oh, anyway, enough.
We should read
next time.
Oh, an all new episode.
I thought we did even. Oh no, we did What Would Blaine Say, didn't we? Yeah, right.
Oh,
sorry.
You did Mark Camphausen.
Those are the advance emails. Those aren't
the
feedback
emails.
Emails.
Right.
I'm
yeah.
So confused.
So
I couldn't find
emails.
Them. Okay.
Okay. So
do you want me to do the first one then?
Can you? I don't know. It goes against your contract.
It is contractually something I'm not allowed to do, but I'm willing to do it today.
All right, well, then you go ahead.
Okay. Our first email tonight is from tonight, today, good morning, good evening, good afternoon. I don't know when you listen to this stuff. It's from Chip Mullins. Hello, Chip. Hello, gentlemen. I wanted to start off by saying I listened through episode 32, Armageddon Game, and I'm still really enjoying your insights, opinions, and discussions about each episode. Before proceeding, I wanted to offer my condolences about Sean. As Paul said in your tribute to Sean Engel, you all put yourselves out there during the podcast, and your listeners may feel like we get to know you somewhat. I know I feel a little like that. Sean was fun to listen to, and I will miss listening to his thoughts about Deep Space Nine and everything else you all meander about sometimes. I know I still have a few more episodes with him, which makes them a little bittersweet to listen to. Season 1. If wishes were horses. I don't think, or at least really hope not, that Bashir wants a fully submissive Jadzia. I think he had desired her since meeting her, and because she's constantly rejecting him, his fantasy has become a Jadzia that only wanted him. General Star Trek topic. In the trio of episodes that begin Season 2, we learn of Cardassia 4 and Bajor 5. In the original series in The Next Generation, they explore planetary systems and name the planets by number, usually uninhabited systems. I thought it was a bit strange that two spacefaring races wouldn't have individual names for the planets in those systems. Is this just the Trek writers being lazy? Yes, probably. Is probably the answer to that.
I'll say something wrong with the Universal Translator. That's how, yeah, because it can't, it doesn't understand that word, so it just goes, Cardassia 4. I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
See, I can see Cardassia having multiple planets all named Cardassia with a Roman numeral after it. Bajor, I don't see it that way. Bajor, I see it as one planet. Vertical. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, Cardassia, you'd have Cardassia Prime, and then you'd have the other, basically, planets that they've conquered.
Yeah, I agree with that. Armageddon Game, Chip continues. What would stop the T'Lani and Kelerans from sending an assassin after Bashir and O'Brien? I think if I were them, I'd be a little paranoid. Look forward to listening to the currently 13 more episodes, despite knowing they soon won't have Sean's voice. Thanks, Chip Mullins from Washington, D.C. Thank you very much, Chip. We're glad that you're still enjoying the show, and we hope you enjoyed the remaining ones with Sean. Because it is coming up on the first anniversary as we record this of Sean's death, so he is very much in our hearts and minds at the moment.
Yes, very much so. I don't know what to add to that, honestly. But thanks for hopping aboard, Chip, and hope you enjoy the ride.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to read an email?
I'll read one.
Bill.
Okay.
What was that?
Bill.
Bill. This one comes from Gene Hendricks. And it is so much for boldly staying. Paul, Andy, and Bill. Yay!
You've made the marquee.
I've made the marquee. First of all, welcome aboard, Bill. Welcome aboard, Captain. Yes, I knew you were on the show before now, but this is an email regarding your first appearance as a co-host, timey-wimey, etc. This is a great episode, mainly for the introductions of the Defiant. It makes sense that Starfleet would create something like that for the Borg, but take it out of mothballs for the Dominion. I also like how it's not a complete solution for the problem, since the Defiant loses the battle. As to Starfleet only sending one ship, they are still recovering from Wolf 359 with replacing ships, so they don't have a lot to spare. One less now that they lost a galaxy class last season. True. They probably have some ships in the area, but that's a big area that also includes Cardassia. Starfleet can spare the Defiant, but that's about it. To put it in Navy terms, if the U.S. just lost two carrier groups, they aren't going to send another in an area that might be, at some point, face an attack. They would, however, bring a tough little ship out of mothballs and assign it to the base in the area while maintaining a presence in the general area. Yeah, I kind of see that. Losing.
I don't know. I think they consider DS9 to be a very, very important strategical property, for lack of a better word. I don't know effectively.
I don't think it's undefended because don't they have they don't have a true quote-unquote neutral zone like they do with the Romulans, but I'm sure they've got ships in the area of Cardassia already that kind of need to stay there just to kind of keep them in check, even though there's a treaty.
I get that they might not have the actual resources to put too much there, but I can't imagine that they're just going to send the Defiant and that's it. It just doesn't sit right with me, and I have no military experience at all. So I'm not saying I really know what I'm talking about.
It also has a cloaking device, which I think they were relying too heavily on, which later we'll see just doesn't really do much.
Well, we've already seen that. I think in the search we saw that they were able to
detect. Right. Well, yeah, that they were able to point. Mm-hmm. So, Eddington's arc is what they should have done with Hudson. Introduce the character and slowly fill in stuff. I know I'm spoiling ahead, but it's much more believable that Sisko would have a grudge with Eddington than with Hudson. Because we saw the relationship before anything happened.
I think he reversed that. He said it's much more believable that Sisko would have a grudge with Eddington. I think he means it the other way around.
With Hudson, yeah. Yeah, because we'll see he gets the whole, you know, like he's Captain Bly. Not Captain Bly.
Captain Ahab.
Ahab, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that is coming up.
Or he's, what's his name? From Les Mis.
Oh, he's Javert?
Javert.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one they actually make the open comparison to.
Eddington
actually calls him Javert.
Mm-hmm. Great, now I'm going to be singing like Miz all day. Thanks, Paul.
Blame Gene. He's not here.
You're the one that said Les Mis.
But he's not here, so we could blame him.
Dun, 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 dun. One issue I have with the sudden onset of Odo's pull to the Gamma Quadrant, I know it's something that they just thought of in the off season, but they might have wanted to play that out a little more. Yeah, I think we said that was kind of quick with his that, you know, and Gene says he's been to the Gamma Quadrant several times and nothing affected him in the least. Now he's just on the other side of the wormhole and feels the pull. What is this? Changeling puberty? Ew. Ew. The Rogue Planet
it's
idea.
Changeling Ponfar.
No more soup! Oh. The Rogue Planet idea is an interesting one, but it's just a little too out there, as Bill said. I don't think it could happen. But you'd have more of a Space 1999 situation where you need an artificial habitat to survive, then have the atmosphere remain intact and perfectly breathable. If they were wearing the force shield belts from the animated series, then I could buy it, but not as it stands. Gene. And I believe on a future episode we will have the discussion of said. Well, no. It would be past now.
Past now, but future.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hammer. I was looking at the Hammer Strikes. Gene Hammer.
That's it. Gene officially has a new
nickname.
Hey,
the Hammer Man.
Gene has a hammer.
That would be my penis. That would be Gene's porn name, Gene Hammer.
No, I think he's Gene the Hammer.
Gene the Hammer Hendrix?
Yeah.
He's Captain Hammer.
Ooh, even better.
Are we talking Hammer from the comedy series? From back in like the 80s and 90s?
No. He's just Captain Hammer now.
Captain Hammer. Captain Gene Hammer?
No.
Hendrix?
No, just Captain Hammer. That's all.
Captain Hammerhead?
I hope Gene likes his new nickname, because it's sticking, baby.
You don't like Gene the podcasting machine?
Too cliche.
Well, I guess it isn't bad. I mean, I came up with both names, so...
That would be like calling him Electric Boogaloo.
Gene Electric Boogaloo Hendrix.
Okay.
Well, that's enough for Gene.
Moving on to the next email. It's from our friend Aaron Henley, and it is titled The Search Part 1. Good day, Andy and Paul. Bill is strangely absent from that title.
That's...
While my initial idea for an email was discussed on the episode feed, there was a point that I hope to clarify. You guys were confused as to why the Federation didn't establish a larger presence on the station to protect it. And we just got into this conversation again. I hope I'm thinking right, but I thought the station was crewed by Starfleet, was still a Bajoran station, and the wormhole is sovereign territory of Bajor, which is not part of the Federation. That is true. I always thought the reason they were able to send a Galaxy-class ship through was on the, at least on paper, excuse of rescuing Federation citizens. After that was accomplished, the Federation had no legal standing for a built-up military presence in a quasi-allied neighbor. By giving the station the Defiant, an untested and problematic ship, Starfleet was doing the best they could. The Defiant line was probably written off as not practical, and the ship was stowed away. When the clear threat arose, Starfleet brought her out as a scouting vessel, similar to a runabout, but one that had enough teeth to help defend herself, if necessary, but a ship no one cared about. Most of the politicians in the Federation probably didn't care, but the ones who did were willing to look the other way, since the Dominion clearly represents a threat. Responsible for the destruction of a Galaxy-class ship and genocide of a colony, just to send a message would definitely make anyone with a brain in their head nervous, to say the least. The idea is similar to what was seen in The Force Awakens, with the Republic not supporting the Resistance, but some people in charge willing to send a few ships, supplies, weapons, pretty much anything that could be hidden on a spreadsheet or report. The same was true with Defiant. Starfleet's hands were tied, but they did the best they could, and that was why they didn't send a few more ships to DS9. Hope that made sense and seemed logical. Thanks for the great episode, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this email. Take care, guys. It definitely makes sense. It seems logical, but ultimately I still disagree with it. I think I go more with the argument that they had less resources than that they wouldn't, that Bajor wouldn't accept their presence, because I think Bajor was probably more aware of the threat than even Starfleet was at that point, or at least the Bajorans, who would have any kind of ability to make a decision on it. So I don't think Bajor would have a problem.
Maybe it, kind of going back to what I said earlier, on the flip side of it, maybe they couldn't, due to whatever treaty they had between the Federation and Cardassia. It would seem like an act of aggression if they did have a large buildup of troops at Bajor. So maybe they couldn't. You know, maybe they could only have a few come in because it is like a neutral, neutral ground.
See, you know what? I could accept that one of those reasons could come into play. I can't accept that they didn't clarify it. I think you could have even had a whole episode over the politics.
Well, we did last week, you know, because we had the whole one where they kicked the Federation off the station, pretty much. And, you know, when
that was more of a coup, unless I'm misremembering.
But it's not Federation territory. Even now, it's the Federation is only on the station at the behest of the Bajoran government. They're basically guests. Like, we're letting you run this for us. I don't know.
I would have liked to have seen an episode where the Federation sent several starships to patrol the area to keep Bajor safe and to keep the wormhole safe, and that there was a Cardassian uprising because of it, and that ultimately, in order to keep peace, Starfleet had to withdraw those ships. I think that could have been a very compelling episode, actually. And it would also explain why they didn't have more there, because to me, the logic of them not having more there is kind of weak. Well, the logic as presented to us.
Yeah. Who would think space politics would be so riveting?
It's riveting when it's well written.
What do you think?
The problem with real life politics is no one's writing them.
Well, the difference about real life politics is that it actually impacts our lives.
Yeah.
It becomes a little less riveting for that reason.
Okay.
All right, so that's it for email for this episode, and that'll do it for this episode. Where are we going to be in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks' time, or next time, on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, there's a crossover of sorts. The captain from Babylon 5 drops by Deep Space Nine for Destiny.
Mmm.
Okay.
Well, hello.
What have we here?
Well, hello, sexy Cardassian ladies.
Truly, you belong up here with us in the stars.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Alright, we ready for... We might as well jump right in. We're already almost 8 o'clock.
Yep. Yeah. Do you wanna stop and start to have a cleaner recording, or do you just wanna go?
No, I say let's just keep going.
Okay.